There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, y'all. Because we can't have class outside today, we'll do it in the normal confines. But I am looking out the window, and a gorgeous, gorgeous day in Mobile and Baldwin County as we get started with Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Sure, glad you're here. The phone and text hotline, 343-0106, 343-0106. If y'all are not from around here, that's 251. We're 251 in this zone. All right, lots to do on today's show. Hour number two of the program. So let's look forward for a second here to hour number two of the show. We will visit this again. We've been talking about this coal ash issue off and on, well, off and on for years, and been drilling down on it the last couple months here, and it's all coming to, not an end, but a head. This is all in a lead up to a public hearing that's going to happen tomorrow in Saraland at the Hampton Inn, and it's a hearing from ADEM, Alabama Department of Environmental Management, doing a public hearing on the coal ash that's there at Berry's steam plant on the Mobile River, whether to cap it in place or whether to move it. Now, we heard last week about the idea of capping it in place, the cost and timeline on that versus moving it, the cost and timeline on that. We'll have advocates for the moving it side of it. Mobile Baykeeper folks will join us in hour number two of the show. So you got questions about that, you want to really get into details on this before tomorrow night's meeting, it will be a good time to do that. So that's starting a little after 1 o'clock after the news coming up next hour. All right, this hour also, Chip Brown, District 105. Number 105 on the list for Alabama districts, but number one in your heart. He will join us at 12:30 as they get back to work in Montgomery tomorrow. We'll talk more about that coming up in just about 25 minutes. All right, so, and some odds and ends here over the weekend. I want to say this, too. Thank you for your patience with us working through some stuff, technical side, over the weekend. And we got great things coming, so thank you, thank you. And remember, you can always stream us live at fmtalk1065.com. This just a note. Maybe somebody can help me on the text line. We have a five-story building here. We're in a five-story building. We're on the first floor of the five-story building. And the vending machines upstairs, which are really just may qualify as gambling devices in the state of Alabama. They're not consistent. You don't always get your drink. So it may be a little bit of gambling going on the second floor, but people will go up there to the vending area. And it's a story from the first, you know, second floor. So you walk up the steps, don't you? Unless you had some condition you couldn't. But I won't judge it until I see somebody dressed in workout gear. When you're in workout gear, when you're in, what is it called, the athleisure stuff, when you're in workout gear and you won't walk a flight of steps, then you think, get out of the workout gear. When you walk around in workout gear, trying to represent that you work out at some point, and you don't walk one flight of steps. So I saw the person up there and back, and they took the elevator both ways. Just a thing I needed to get off my chest. Also coming up, booze to the rescue of the U.S. Post Office. We'll talk about what this idea is that may save the Post Office by delivering booze. Also a heads up, too, vaccine talk today. It's moving along quite nicely again down at the Alabama Cruise Terminal as Mobile County Health Department, who just got their new super cold Yeti Pfizer cooler. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Dr. Chavers, but they're having an event today. It goes on throughout, I think it goes till 8 tonight, but this is at the cruise terminal. And as I saw the last note here, it was no wait at the cruise terminal. So you want to get your vaccine, the first dose of the vaccine. That's going on today at the Alabama cruise terminal. All right. We'll remind you more about that coming up later on in the show. I want to get started here and talk guns, right? And talk gun control and what you've been maybe hearing over the weekend that's fixing to come out of the Biden administration and maybe not out of Congress, because, you know, the push is they're saying Jen Psaki and everybody's saying, oh, well, they're going to get it done. The House has passed this bill and that bill. Well, the House has passed bills, but there's not the Democrat Senate votes to get it passed there. So it's going to go executive action. Actually, this was the commentary last week on just that. Let's hear. This is from a press conference. Here is Jen Psaki.
And it is certainly something he will continue to advocate for.
Will there be new executive action on gun violence?
We are certainly considering a range of levers, including working through legislation, including executive actions to address, not just gun safety measures, but violence in communities. So that is has been under discussion. And
okay, so violence in communities. I'll get on board there. I mean, what's our story? I mean, this morning. This story gets reported this morning. Three shot and five hospitalized at Bel Air Boulevard in Cottage Hill this overnight. A story from NBC 15 says at least five people have been shot overnight in Mobile near the intersection, which is odd because the headline was three shot and five hospitalized. But it says, story here, at least five people have been shot overnight in Mobile near the intersection of Bel Air Boulevard and Cottage Hill Road. Five people showed up at the hospital. One was a juvenile. So another child shot here in our fair city. Police think that four people were shot near the intersection of Bel Air and Cottage Hill, and another person shot at a different location. No fatalities reported at this time from that. But five people shot. So if the Biden administration wants to, you know, tackle this issue, I'm all on board. But if tackling this issue is an executive action, because they don't have the support in Congress, an executive action to ban what? Y'all want to say it with me? Assault weapons. Right, right. They're going after assault weapons. Now, what is driving the day in and day out murder and shooting of human beings in our country? Is it assault weapons? No. Not assault weapon, but that's what they're going to go after, at least in the executive action. Because why? Even with the Democrats, think about this, and think about how left this idea is going forward, that even when the Democrats are in control of the executive and the legislative branch, that it would have to be an executive action and not make it through Congress. Think about that. I mean, the Democrats have the control. And still, they would leave it up to an executive action for the president. Of course, it would then be challenged in the Supreme Court pretty quickly. So, and the idea here is, I want to run this real fast here. A story from New York Post today says Biden says he's optimistic about passing gun control through the divided Senate. No, he's not. He's saying that, but that's, well, maybe he thinks that, but that's not what the votes look like. Said President Biden on Sunday expressed optimism about getting gun control legislation passed on Capitol Hill, claiming he's done it before and can do it again. Yeah, back in the Clinton day. We'll talk about that in a second. President said that he was even willing to call Republican members of Congress to help push through a deal in an evenly divided Senate. It's because he doesn't have Democrat votes that he needs. Biden was referring, of course, we said he did it before, to the 1994 federal assault weapons ban. And he said he did it then. Now he could do it today. But I want to look through this just for a second. Those of y'all that weren't around back then or maybe not paying attention, the assault weapon ban, the Clinton assault weapon ban, right? So Biden said, I did it back then. He's voted as a senator, and we can do it again. So what did it do back then? What was the assault weapons ban of 1994? Do y'all remember? It did include some rifles by name, went through and banned those by name. But it also went after how they looked, y'all. If a gun had a folding stock or a telescoping stock, like a lot of carbines will have a telescoping stock that you can adjust. Well, if the stock is obviously the issue because they banned those. If it had a pistol grip, they banned those. Here's where they got hardcore in 1994. Those of y'all did not study this. This is how they really made a change in gun violence in our country. If a rifle had a bayonet mount, it was banned. Now, back then, you could own one. You were grandfathered in, but you couldn't sell a new rifle that had a bayonet mount. Because that's really our issue on the streets these days is the bayoneting of people. You know, it's not the gunplay with a 9 or a 40. No, it's people fixing bayonets and charging positions. Also, a flash suppressor. Or if you had a threaded barrel. So, in other words, you couldn't have a flash suppressor. So, you couldn't hide the flash, unless you had one grandfathered in, or went around it in several different ways. You couldn't have, this one's probably a grenade launcher. Now, I got a question. If the weapon ban, this is 94, but Biden's saying he did it then, so he's probably going to run the same kind of idea here. The grenade launcher is not so much the issue as the grenades. So, but back then they banned rifles that had grenade launchers on them. Now, you couldn't get a grenade, but you couldn't have a grenade launcher. Remember the bayonet thing, too. Also, semi-automatic pistols with detachable magazines, they say here. That's the definition of a semi-automatic, right? Said detachable semi-automatic pistols with detachable magazines. Who wrote this? Threaded barrel shroud. They said, and if it was a weight of 50 ounces or more with the pistol unloaded. So the size of the pistol, going after the Desert Eagles and all those. Also, how about your shotgun? Semi-auto, they're always talking about the semi-automatic assault guns. What about semi-automatic assault shotguns? What makes it banned back in 94? And maybe I would guess they would go after it again. That is, if you have on the Remington 1100 or 1187 or the Browning A5 or a Benelli, if you've gone and mounted a folding or telescoping stock, which I don't know why you do that to that thing, but that would ban it. If your shotgun has a pistol grip, it was banned in 94. Let me point something out. Right now, state of Alabama, turkey season is in the state of Alabama. And if I was somebody who went turkey hunting and I had a shotgun to do it, I'd probably just go take pictures of them. But if I did, there's a whole bunch of manufacturers that have pistol grip shotguns for turkey hunting because of the you're shooting at a hopefully stationary target. It's a different kind of shooting than dove or quail or something like that. There's a bunch of camo shotguns people take turkey hunting that fall under that. And any shotgun with a detachable magazine, which y'all remember the old Marlin bolt action shotguns with a detachable magazine? So I'm just saying, this is what they did in 94. Biden got his arm out of socket, patting himself on the back for what he did back then, and said he could do it again. So even Jen Psaki saying that they're gonna move this through Congress, and Biden said, oh yeah, we're gonna get the Senate to do this. Now they're moving on to an executive order, and if you take Biden at his word, it's going to be like 94. So there's some of the ideas and things they check. All right. Enough of that for right now. We can talk about that later on this week. Believe me, it's not going anywhere. We'll talk, maybe answer a couple texts when we get back from the break. But I do want to talk about this post office thing, too, because y'all remember, I talked about it back in February, and if you go back and look at my Twitter feed, at FM Talk 1065 on Twitter, you'll see where I posted up the end of February, where we received mail from as far back as September, newspapers from November. Stuff from our clients out there that had been months in the mail. Couldn't get us that, but I point out that every Sunday, USPS is dropping off stuff for other carriers. Well, now if it was booze, they say they may make some money.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
No, hold on a second. Hold on. Yes, and purchase, click. All right, there we go. Just ordering some bayonet mounts. For rifles, I probably don't have. I'm just having it just because I thought it'd be neat to have some bayonet mounts before they get banned. How about that, huh? Y'all didn't, some people said, no, I didn't know that. Well, yeah, bayonet mounts. They were in the Clinton-era assault weapons ban. Bayonet mounts, if your rifle had that, let alone a folding stock, whew, man. You'd be in trouble on that one. Although I may never get See how I get the delivery of the bayonet mount, see if they ever show up. Let me visit that for a second. I know a lot of commentary here on the guns, gun ban questions, where they will go. By the way, Natalie, I did see your text about Tannerite. Natalie said, you can buy Tannerite. I may or may not have purchased. Natalie, have you ever seen, in the old days, we used to be able to get dynamite before the dirtbag bombed the Murrah building. We'd get it at the co-op and all that, and you can get it now, but it was a lot easier to get it back then. Tannerite's a little more of a pain, but probably safer, and what it does to a beaver lodge. I got some video. Well, all right, we'll do that on another show. Also, so many texts here. Somebody was, and I probably can't find this one at the same time, but yeah, here it is. Unnamed texter. I like this. My hope is an executive order that infringes on our Second Amendment. It's found unconstitutional and opens up the larger conversation about what exactly executive orders can be used for, and let SCOTUS define those reduced limits so Congress has to actually do their jobs and start working together again. I don't know who you are, unnamed texter, but I agree with you. I lament that so much is been punted by the legislative branch to let it be in the world of the executive and then on to the Supreme Court. You know, I mean, they're legislaw. Make the laws. Do your job. All right, this post office thing. Just before, because we got some state news coming up in a little bit. But the post office thing, we had the story, and I know I told it on air back when it happened. But in February, we received, like, one day at the mailbox here for Bigler Broadcasting for FM Talk 106.5. We had mail. It was the end of February, and we had mail from as far back as the beginning of September. This is what was odd. It wasn't even clustered around a certain date. We had September mail, October mail, November mail, December mail, January mail, and then the normal stuff we should have gotten on that last week of February, like, you know, things that were postmarked then. Okay, we had newspapers from back in November show up that get sent to the station from different publications, all showed up at one time. It leaves a whole bunch of questions I have of where's that stuff sitting, why does it all come at one time? But then you got the question around the post office as well of, going forward, how much do we need them and what capacity? So, and that's one of the questions that, you know, they said, well, they could go to 4 days a week or 3 days a week. I think Dan and Dalton were talking about it this morning. I want to point out, though, that on a Sunday, when you see a postal vehicle delivering, right, delivering for the other carriers, had no issue with that. Get those things on time. Why is it that the Postal Service can do that, but not the other part of it? And I'm not saying that rhetorically. I mean, it's a fair question. Why is it? What are the problems? Is it the profit incentive of delivering for those other carriers on the weekends? I think it is. And now, well, a new 10-year plan has been rolled out for the post office, right? And in the 10-year plan, this story from NBC News says, missing from the 10-year plan were the ideas of economists, members of Congress, and a consumer advocate that say could generate billions of dollars for the beleaguered service and bring the post office into the 21st century. Okay? Two things. A return to postal banking and the post office entry into the lucrative alcohol delivery business. So booze to the rescue of the post office. He said, postal banking is among the new services the post office of the 21st century could and should provide, they say. It would include basic banking services, including check cashing, providing low or no-fee checking accounts, installing low-fee ATMs, blah, 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 providing wire transfer bill payment services. And the other part of it is, they said that if the post office wants to bring the money in, they need to get in the business of delivering booze. Booze delivery could bring huge money and save the post office. Be a question if you order some booze. Of course, Alabama, you wouldn't be able to have it delivered to you. But if you're somewhere you could, would that or the letter you sent to grandma get there first? I'm not quite sure. But yes, booze possibly to the rescue of the Postal Service. More on that coming up. Representative Chip Brown joins us next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, boogity, boogity, boogity. Here we go. It's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Coming up, check in with District 105 Rep. Chip Brown as they get back on it in Montgomery. Wow. right now. I know, why don't you say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. Fresh week to work with. Let's talk inventory, Larry.
All right, we can do that. As a matter of fact, I got some on the way. We've got drivers going to pick up five vehicles. It's a mix of truck, cars, and SUVs, and then we got other stuff coming in from other directions. And then, as we talked about off air, I just got a 2014 Toyota Camry XLE with only 29,000 miles. Clean car, fixed one of them.
Wow. To see a vehicle like that that already stands the test of time, but one that doesn't hardly have any miles on it, that's going to go pretty quickly. Let's talk about that. Somebody wants to check that vehicle out. It's on the lot now?
It's on the lot right now, and I mean, we don't even have to detail it. It's got the WeatherTech mats. It's got, you know, it's just Michelin tires. I mean, it's just one of a kind.
All right. Give us directions to come see that vehicle and the full selection at LCM.
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road. And you can see it online at lcmmotorcars.com. They can like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right. So we'll talk some Montgomery here. I know there's been a lot of Montgomery talk so far, but they're only just now hitting the back nine. If I get that correctly, I'll check in because talking to Representative Congressman Chip Brown, District 105. So what, the last number on the charts, but the first number in our hearts. Check it in now. Hey, man.
That's right, Sean.
Yeah, y'all just now getting on the back nine, right? This is the middle point of the session?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the pace will start picking up from here. And, it gets frantic. As we get closer to the end, it really becomes a big flurry of activity. But it's we got a lot going for us.
Well, I want to talk about that. I mean, it has seemed, and maybe it's just because so much has been talked around gaming, but it seems like the first half, like you're sitting here saying, well, get ready. It's going to be a flourish of activity here at the end or the second half of the session, but it seems like it's been busy so far. Maybe that is just all the permutations of gaming that has driven that conversation. Your thoughts on where we're heading here in the last half? Does something hit this house that you would vote yes on? Is it what does that look like? Is it comprehensive? Is it individual? What are you thinking?
Well, on the activity side,
though, and we're having trouble hearing you, by the way. I don't know.
Oh, okay, hang on.
There we go. Yeah.
How about now?
Yeah, a lot better.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, on the activity side, I think this year people were spooked a little bit by what happened last year with the COVID and cutting the session short. So I think there's been a real big push this year to get a lot done quickly. I think closing out, you asked me about gaming. I think it's coming back. You've got the two lottery bills, and I personally would like to see them separated. I'd like to see a lottery bill and then have a gaming and sports bill. So a parimutuel bill. So that's what I would like to see, have them separated. But what's going to happen in the Senate, I have no idea.
Well, I mean, the idea, right, is that these were packaged together, and I know there's a bunch of reasons they have stated why, but I mean, come on. I mean, part of patching them together is having the lottery is your lead blocker, so you can bring through Class 3 gaming, right? Or and sports betting.
Well, I think the lottery is more attractive to a larger group of people. I think there's a lot of people that could in the legislature that would vote for a lottery that would not necessarily vote for casino gaming. So I think that's I think that's the purpose of having it as one. I mean, that's not the way it's normally done in other states, but
in Alabama, let's not do it that way. Let's do it this
well,
way.
Well, I'd like to see them separated because I do think they're separate issues. I think they're, they are different classes of gaming. And so I personally would like to see them separated and have the people be able to vote on them separately, be able to vote on a lottery and then be able to vote on actual gaming and sports betting. But, we'll see if that's the way it works out because there's not a House bill this year. In the past, there's been a House bill, and then this year, the decision was made not to bring a House bill and just see what happens in the Senate and let them bring it down to us, and then we work on it how we want to work on it, and see what happens. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, problem is I'm told that it doesn't work. That doesn't, and not because the votes aren't there. You just point out the votes are there. Lottery, I think, I would bet on it would pass easily.
Yeah.
But the issue is that there are certain beaks not being wetted on this, right? And therefore, I'm told that because of that, it won't pass. And I worry about if you do this, it means the Portage Bandit Creek Indians could do this, that, and the other. It seems like it's less about the will of the people and the people might vote on a constitutional amendment, and the will is more about the will of individual interest in Montgomery.
Well, I think that, you know, you got to remember, though, that individual interest, those people that represent different districts think of, you know, if they say, let's say the Wiregrass area, you know, they were left out of the original package. You know, if they thought it was best interest that they get a facility and it wasn't in the bill, then, you know, they'd have reason to object. The people from Greene County, the representatives over in that area that only had one out of the existing currently operating bingo facilities, or in Lowndes County. And, you know, so, I mean,
okay, but
you got to look after your district.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you're looking after your district is saying that there can be no other players in this, and that we're not putting things up for bid for the state to get the highest revenue it can for doing this. It is not regular. I get it. I'm a homer for, you know, for 105 and AL1 and everything down here in this neck of the woods. I'll tell people I'm being a homer here. You know, this is my place. This is my home. But at the same time, if they're going to roll out a bill and the Wiregrass says, hey, we need to have a casino facility here, I agree with the Wiregrass. And if the folks in Greene County say, well, we want to have one here, that's fine. But it's not that. The folks in the Wiregrass are saying we need one. That's fine. The folks in Greene County say we want to be grandfathered in to what we're already doing versus saying that here's the law of the land. It's now legal. And you can, you know, there's going to be each county can decide or whatever if it's going to have gaming. And then it puts these up for bid, these licenses. You know, and I'm talking about, you know, class three, not lottery. And then you get the most money for it. I mean, an idea where you allocate without having an auction, so to speak, on these is not the best way to get the most money for the state.
Well, and I definitely see what you're saying on the free market approach. But, you know, what you're describing is why I would like to see them separated, because the lottery is a much less complicated issue than, you know, casino gaming or sports betting, because and when you get into casino gaming, you get into specific facilities and territories, and it's just a much more complicated issue than the lottery that applies to everyone across the state. And I think that's why I would prefer to see them separated.
Yeah, and I think it, a lot of people in Alabama, I think it is, I guess it's odd to me that it's getting so down in the ruts on this, because it's going to be a particularly popular move, right? Vote yes votes for, let's just say it was a lottery bill, and I know there's some nuance to it, but let's say a clean lottery bill. I don't know of many in the legislature that wouldn't want to vote for that, because the constituents back home generally are going to say, okay, good, I'm glad you did that.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it definitely would pass. I mean, because you got to remember, too, what you're voting on is allowing the people to actually have a vote. We haven't had a vote on that since 1999.
Yeah, and the polling, I mean, the polling data is out there. I mean, it's, you know, it's popular.
I think it's like 72% the last thing I saw.
There's not a lot of things.
Favor of it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of things in Montgomery that are 72% approval, right?
No, that's for sure.
All right. Well, so do you have do you think you'll be looking at something this week in the House specifically?
Well, my understanding I think in the Senate, you know, things are getting ready to happen from what the chatter that I'm hearing, you know, people always have to remember the Senate and the House are two complete distinct bodies that have their own rules, and you know, it just, they operate completely differently. And so you sometimes we don't necessarily know what's going on in the Senate, and they don't know what's going on in the House, you know, until it actually, right before it happens. And sometimes that leads to problems. But, I think that from what I'm hearing, we're getting ready to see a lot of movement in the Senate on it.
All right. We'll be watching that and see what that looks like that may come to you in the House. So about other issues facing Alabama in the short term, we're looking at just, 9, 10, 11 days, whatever we have left between now and the end of the mask mandate. That's coming. So I could take that and say it looks like we've turned a corner here. We're moving out of this COVID crisis. You could look at several other stories and say it's coming right back. But you look at all this money that's now allocated again to the state of Alabama, right? We had still had money from the first round. Now we've got the super spender bill that came out of Washington, the $1.9 trillion. Alabama could see as much as $4 billion coming to the state. What does that mean to you as a person that is in the body that holds the purse strings there in the House?
Well, you know, it depends on that first round of COVID money that came down to the states was so tightly regulated as far as where it could go. It couldn't go to businesses to offset losses or nonprofits to offset losses, which was a huge mistake to me. I mean, you had facilities, let's take in my district, Dauphin Island Sea Lab, that, you know, they were impacted dramatically because they reply a lot. I mean, they are dependent on tuition from universities that send their college students down there to study marine biology and for ticket sales. And so they didn't get that. But yet when the COVID money came out, it didn't really benefit them. It should have, but it didn't because you couldn't use it to offset losses due to, you know, basically due to the event and due to attendance and that sort of thing. So it was so tightly regulated. So I'm just waiting to see really how this is, how tightly regulated it is to see what benefit it actually has for the state.
Well, one of the
for my district.
Yeah, well, one of the parts of this is more statewide, but expanding Medicaid. You know, that seems like something that was always a no from, I think, every Republican I talked to. At least it seems like there's a little bit, not a whole bunch, but there's a little bit of Republicans wanting to discuss this going forward.
Well, you know, I'm open to discuss anything, but my problem with that issue, Sean, is what's going to happen when that COVID money runs out and then we have so many more people on the rolls and we're not able to afford that. There's going to come a time when they're going to pull that back and then the state's going to be left holding the bill. And I'm leery of that. I'm very leery of any effort to expand Medicaid just simply because at what point is the state going to have to actually ante up and pay for that? And that's coming. I mean, you know, you can't just say we're going to do this because we've got this COVID money and not realize that eventually that's not going to be there and then the state will have to ante up. So that's a big concern for me. I'd be leery of expanding Medicaid.
All right, coming right back. More with Representative District 105 Chip Brown right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 12:51 FM Talk 1065 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. 54 hours a week of podcasts sitting there on the shelves waiting for you at fmtalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab or subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify. A ton of places have the podcast you can sign up for. All right, continue our conversation with Representative Chip Brown from District 105. So it's second half starts this week. What does that mean for what bills get done? Like, where are we on budgeting in the state? And that, and, you know, is that going to dominate any of the discussion, or is that all done?
Well, you know, it's still we're still working on parts of that. You know, but it's not. It's, you know, it's interesting, Sean. We're financially in good shape budget wise, and we're. It's just not a controversial issue like it used to be in the past. I mean, we're not in proration. And, you know, one of the smartest things that happened when the Republicans won the legislature in 2010, they made steps to ensure rainy day funds and reserves. They had the Rolling Reserve Act. And so that always ensures that we really will never go into proration. So we're in good financial shape. Actually, I think it was Forbes maybe rated Alabama's budgeting process in the top five in the country as far as being economically sound. So that's a far cry from the way it used to be, where we were constantly in proration and, you know, cutting spending, and it unfortunately used to always be taken out in the classrooms. So that's not the case. Teachers are getting a raise this year, and I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, and this is even without lottery revenue or gaming revenue. This is just as it sits now.
That's right. That's right. You know, so the COVID pandemic, it really didn't. It had an impact, but because of online sales, it really offset people going into stores. So, you know, financially, it wasn't as big of a hit as you would think it would be. And fortunately, the governor didn't do a total lockdown for very long. I think that we're looking at a rebellion on our hands if that would have taken place. And, you know, that's happened in a lot of liberal states like Michigan and Pennsylvania and New York, and it's just totally ruined their economy.
I want to do this. It's a federal issue, but it overlays with 105 for sure. And Congressman Jerry Carl was in studio last week talking about a bill that he's on board with that is basically saying to the Department of the Interior, any kind of difference in money from what we're getting now from Go Mesa to what it may be reduced in the future, the Interior Department's on for it. I think that has a snowball's chance of getting through, but it says something very important about that money for the reason we get Go Mesa money. I mean, the reason District 105, you're the footprint for oil and natural gas coming inshore, right? I mean, and this is pretty darn important to funding projects.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you know, that. Why should the money, when the people of Dolphin Island look out, see natural gas rigs off the shore of Dolphin Island, or you see them out in Mobile Bay, why should the money from all of that go to Wyoming or go to New York or California? I mean, it you know, or go to even really to go to the interior to offset parks and Yellowstone. I mean, that money should stay in the states that bear the burden of that and the possible environmental risk of it. That money should stay here. You know, that it should. And I appreciate Congressman Jerry Carl for standing up and fighting for us on it. It's important.
What do before we finish up, too, think about a conversation you and I have had many times this session about fortified roofs and fortified homes here and a push for more funding for it with the tragedy in central Alabama from the tornadoes. It seems like there's going to be people with this on their mind, you know, when you talk to folks up there. It may not be their issue specifically, but you know, getting people the best rates on insurance and getting their homes as sturdy as possible must be on the minds of many that aren't even from the coast.
It definitely, you know, there's I've had discussions with several lawmakers in the House and in the Senate on that very issue from other parts of the state, particularly in the Tornado Alley area up there around Birmingham and central and north Alabama. You know, that thing about Strength Alabama Homes is it's really a statewide program. I mean, it is more popular in Mobile and Baltimore County because of hurricanes, but it is a statewide program. And so there is support for it across the state. I mean, we're just waiting for it to come up on the floor of the Senate and get a vote on the Senate floor. I actually had a discussion this morning with the Department of Insurance, and we're hopeful that it's going to come up very soon and get voted on. That'd be a big issue for the people in Mobile and Baltimore County to be able to clear out that backlog and put some new roofs on.
Yeah, I know, and I know we've talked about this, but we have about 90 seconds left. Give people who haven't followed that bill specifically how this works, where the money comes from.
Sure, the money for Strength Alabama Homes is actually from insurance companies, from fees and fines that they pay to the Department of Insurance, and then that's the state insurance budget. But then they also contribute twice a year to a fund for Strength Alabama Homes, and what this bill does is it allows for the first time to take money out of what's left over in the budget this year to help clear out that backlog. And then moving forward, it allows the Commissioner of Insurance to actually budget money for it for the first time and not just totally rely on those contributions. But all of the money would still come from insurance companies. So it's a win for insurance companies, and it's a big win for consumers.
There we go. Appreciate your time as always, and we'll be talking soon after another week here in the second half of the legislative session in Montgomery. Representative, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too. There he is, District 105 Representative Chip Brown joining us. Usually does it on Friday, but because of the off week last week, we kind of mixed it up. He'll be back joining us on Friday after each week. And yeah, the second half, I can believe it. I think it's the idea, though, that the pitch will move up in the second half like it always does is something, because it's been pretty pitchy so far, at least on the gaming side, hadn't it? All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. So the meeting we've talked about several times, you've heard the advertisements and the conversations around this. ADEM is having a meeting tomorrow in Saraland. They're going to be listening to our voices on whether to cap in place or move to another place, the coal ash at Berry Steam Plant. So Kate Kistler and Casey Calloway from Mobile Baykeeper join me next to talk more about that right here on FM Talk 106.5. We'll be right back.